én kofferidemért ne zsáj. Lepáté samostámi van tiszte dolgok, hogy nékene. Tom dol szavrát a patrőr. Én ezt pedig nem tudom, hogy nem tudom, hogy nem Patrón dol zagléran madama en osva.
Rész.
Ebi palné, mlát, mlát, én tot is szív. Szív, не та німські окшалі, чорні батони. Право тиста, право вовк. Красно.
Радійські згодби о людях, які створюють дух часу на радіо студент.
Dve leti sta minili od arabske revolucije, ki jo je prinesla vstaja ljudstva, začenši s tistim, ki biva v Tuniziji. Kot vsaka revolucija je tudi arabska prinesla novo oblast. Nova oblast v državah na omenjenem prostoru je prinesla številna nasprotovanja prebivalstva. Ljudje, ki so gojili in še vedno gojijo naklonjenost do novonastalih mladih demokracij, so v veliki meri razočarani. Razočaranje v prvi vrsti izhaja iz novonastalih ustav, ki so v svoji vsebini zaobšle nekatere bistvene pravice. V današnjem Zeitgeistu se bomo posvetili pravici do svobode izražanja, ki ima v državah arabske pomladi številne zakonske in tiste bolj subtilne ovire. Le-te onemogočajo njeno implementacijo in s tem po definiciji razvoj demokracije kot take. Položaj medijev arabskih držav, ki so zrušile svoje diktatorje in tudi v tistih, ki so sredi bojev za demokratizacijo držav, je bila tudi tema seminarja za novinarje v Evropskem parlamentu v Bruslju. Zadeva z naslovom Euro-mediteranski odnosi in arabska pomlad, dve leti kasneje, se je dogajala od 4. do 6. junija z množično udeležbo novinarjev iz arabskih držav. Spomnimo, da je pravica do svobode izražanja ena temeljnih človekovih pravic in svoboščin, ki zajema svobodo misli, sprejemanje in oddajanje mnen ter idej ter svobodo medijev. Prav slednji so tisti, ki jim bomo v naslednjih slabih 30 minutah posvetili še največ prostora. Oddajo odpiram Ani Podimata, informacijska pooblaščenka v Evropskem parlamentu.
In the Arab countries, the process of democratic reforms has to be continued by holding elections in line with the democratic standards and by strengthening the role of the civil society and the increasing of the freedom of expression. Let me also say, as a former journalist, that I'm very much attached to the defense of the fundamental rights of the press and the freedom of expression. As you know, every year, the European Parliament awards the Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought. In 2011, the prize was awarded to 5 activists of the Arab Spring who contributed by their actions to historic changes in the Arab world. This gesture intended to be a symbol for all those working for dignity, democracy, and fundamental rights in the Arab world and beyond. The situation of media in the Arab countries and the role of the press in the Arab Spring is another very important aspect of the question. Certainly, there are differences between the regime of the different countries involved in the Arab Spring, and these differences are reflected in the media. But we can agree, and I think that we should agree, on the fact that in many Arab countries there is a clear manipulation of the press, and the situation of the freedom of the press has to be improved.
Odnos predstavnikov Evropskega parlamenta do držav iz Severne Afrike in Male Azije, pa tudi do ostalih iz širnega sveta, je v veliki meri pogojen s koristjo, ki jih ima stara celina od njih. Kršenje osnovnih človekovih pravic, kot so svoboda izražanja, pride na dnevni red evropskih politikov takrat, ko se le te kršitve zgodijo v bližini naftnih vrelcev. Več o tem Edward McMillan Scott, eden izmed številnih podpredsednikov Evropskega parlamenta, sicer pa tisti, ki je v omenjeni instituciji odgovoren za človekove pravice.
My most famous relation is Colonel T. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia. He was a British Army officer who served actively during the First Arab Revolt in 1916-1917, in which the Arab nation, he wanted them to come together to throw off the Ottoman Empire. But he knew at the time that by drawing the Arabs into the First World War, on the side of the Allies, he was part of British foreign policy and French foreign policy, because those two countries sought to, in effect, colonialize the Middle East after the war, and that's what happened. So when Mr. Panzeri refers to our deep and troubled history with the region, he is correct. We sustained tyrants and dictators for far too long. I was at his foreign ministry in Rome a few years ago, and I was asking why the Italian government at the time was less interested in reform in countries like Libya. And they said, we need the oil and gas. And I said, but surely it's better to buy oil and gas from democrats than dictators. And that's always been my view. So when it comes to the question of Libya, for example, the intervention by the United Kingdom and France was initially to preserve the lives of a threatened population, but also, I believe, to achieve regime change. As far as Egypt is concerned, as I said, I think it is a great country. It is a country I love. And I recognize also that there are problems with the minorities like the Copts and others, and that the current government, I try and avoid calling it a regime, is working its way through extreme difficulties, but I believe it's working its way through them with oppressive and dictatorial means. It is using or misusing the constitution to suit a political agenda, and dare I say, although I respect the role of religion in politics, for religious motives also. And so it is not my duty to speak to the government of Egypt.
Marjet je Šake, članica Komiteja Evropskega parlamenta za kulturo in izobrazbo, izhaja iz poročila, ki ima naslov Svobodno novinarstvo v svetu. V pričujočem posnetku se Šakejeva dotakne pomislekov, ki se nanašajo na izkušnje novinarjev o senzacionalističnem poročanju. Na prostoru, kjer je kršitev človekovih pravic pogosta, poročanje o leteh, kar naenkrat ni več zanimivo. Šakejeva meni, da je poročanje vendarle potrebno izvzeti iz marketinške logike.
Very critical words about the lack of sticking to human rights, the rule of law in dealing with the governments of countries in North Africa and the Middle East. At the same time, I don't think we should look at this in a black and white manner. The EU has been working with civil society organizations, media organizations, human rights organizations, development programs on the ground in North Africa and the Middle East for decades. There is more than just government policies in terms of statements and political meetings. There has been outreach to the populations for a very long time, but we have to acknowledge the sensitivity of the people involved. We saw this in the past. I mean, if you would label a program a democracy program, it would put the people participating in danger in a number of countries. And the same is the situation now. It is not easy for us to work in countries where Europeans are labeled as foreign agents, where NGOs are being restricted, whether they come from abroad or whether they come from the countries themselves. We've seen the verdict in Egypt yesterday against people working for international but also Egyptian NGOs. This is a real challenge, and we have to be aware, and we've sought to find a way that at least the people on the ground are not put in danger as a result of working with the European Union, whether it is official programming or through NGOs. And it's something I think deserves more attention, because money coming from Gulf states is often not labeled as foreign agents, while money coming from the European Union is, and this makes no sense in my opinion. Last but not least, I don't believe so much in the distinction between objective, let's say, truth-finding media and opinions. I think it is important to develop critical thinking towards all kinds of news sources, and we shouldn't underestimate the way in which also journalists and media outlets are instrumentalized in political games, in information war even. And it is important to develop critical thinking as early as possible and throughout all of society to assess information, whether it's online or offline.
Na poročanje evropskih medijskih hiš, ki svojega bodi si poslušalca, bodi si gledalca, smatra kot potrošnika, so opozorili predvsem novinarji iz Sirije. Po njihovi oceni naj bi preko novinarjev Evropa dobila zgolj 20% verodostojnih podatkov iz kriznega območja v Mali Aziji, govori Marjetje Šake.
Talking about the coverage of Syria, it is indeed very important, but it's also clear that a lot of people who are bringing information into the social media and media often have an agenda. And it is very regrettable that it's become so life-threatening for journalists to work in Syria and to do the work that they should be doing. And I believe in terms of understanding where people come from and looking through information wars or conflicts about reporting, that one, critical thinking, which I've mentioned before, is important, but two, is transparency. It is very clear that there are also media organizations which are seeking to address one side of a story much more forcefully than another, or rather to not report on certain stories instead. And I was surprised to hear, but maybe it was lost in translation, and therefore I wanted to ask my neighbor from Arabia again, did I understand correctly that you said you don't know where the funding of Al Arabiya comes from? Because I think it is a responsibility of journalists to know who funds the organization that they work for. This is also part of transparency. It doesn't mean there is automatically no editorial independence, but it is essential to know who you're working for, who is paying your salary. I don't think that's possible to say that we don't know this.
Ob klasičnih delodajalcih se je v sodobnem času odprla nova platforma, nov način poročanja, ki izhaja iz socialnih omrežij. Tovrstna izmenjava informacij svojo najznačilnejšo lastnost nosi v osebnih karakteristikah uporabnika. Celotna sfera je še v poporodnih krčih in se posledično še razvija, komentira Šakejeva.
In terms of false facts or rumors or claims that are going around social media, I would very much be against imposing sanctions on this beyond existing laws against hate speech, let's say, or discrimination that can be invoked, whether it is after use of social media or a comment in the street or otherwise. I believe that we have and we should foster a public square where people can challenge each other's ideas. And the opportunity that social media offers is that anyone can challenge anyone else, and that people on a very individual level can even challenge the most powerful people. And I want to give two examples to illustrate what I'm trying to explain. At one point in the presidential campaign, Hillary Clinton made a very emotional speech about her being ready to be the president because under gunfire and bombardment, you know, she had landed in a former Yugoslav country, and going through this incredible hardship was one way to prove, you know, that she was ready to take on the incredibly difficult tasks. And within minutes, YouTube clips of her actual landing in Bosnia at that time were surfaced, and there was no such thing as guns being shot and bombs flying around. So immediately this claim was challenged. Similarly, I experienced it myself over the past weekend. We saw pictures of the demonstrations in Turkey. There were certain pictures of people on the bridges over the Bosphorus, you know, masses of people. But there were also pictures that apparently were showing a marathon with people on the bridges a couple of months ago. So they were pictures of people on the bridge, but not the same people on the bridge going to the demonstrations. And it was a good thing that people could immediately say, hold on, this picture is from a marathon. This picture is from this morning. So I think that the fact that we can challenge each other and have an open debate should not be met with sanctions, but should be met with very critical debate that everybody can have in freedom without restrictions. That's the best remedy against rumors and for a pluralist open debate.
V državah, kot so Egipt, Tunizija in Libija, so se po tako imenovani arabski pomladi zgodile parlamentarne volitve. V večini primerov so le-te med ljudstvo prinesle razočaranje nad novo izvoljeno oblastjo. Nastajajo pomisleki o jahanju vstajniških konjev, ki so ob pogledu vsebine novih ustav posameznih republik upravičeni, govori Marjetje Šake.
I believe it's essential that it's understood that democracy is more than one man, one vote. The respect for minorities, whether they are different political opinions, whether they are different religion, whether they are different ethnicity, whether they are women or otherwise, quote unquote, in a less powerful position than those who have the majority, is essential. It is the responsibility of those elected, however, or of those in government, however, to ensure for the well-being of all people, and they can be held accountable on the basis of their political programs and in delivering on the respect of people's rights and the provision of opportunities for people. And I think that the claim that just because a government has been elected and that that is therefore legitimate in every act that it undertakes is a very, very dangerous one. We also see this now in Turkey. Yes, the government in Turkey has been elected by a majority, but yes, there are also authoritarian tendencies that can be criticized just as much. So I would advise everyone to really dig deeper into what democracy, checks and balances, good governance, and independence of institutions really means. It is essential.
V drugem delu oddaje se bomo osredotočili na konkretno situacijo svobode in cenzure medijev v Egiptu in možni vlogi Evropske unije za boljšo pozicijo novinarstva na območju arabskih držav. Za začetek poslušajmo svobodno novinarko iz Egipta, Shahiro Amin, ki govori o medijski situaciji v državi in nadaljevanju upora in revolucije v post-Mubarakovem času, v katerem je oblast zasedla močno religiozno zaznamovana stranka svobode in pravice s predsednikom Mohamedom Mursijem na čelu.
Scene in Egypt is diverse, it's vibrant, but it's also sensational and tabloid. The journalists are still trying to find their feet after so many years of repression. The journalists lack training, and a lot of them are falling back into the pit of, you know, self-censorship because they're worried about losing their jobs or even their lives. We have new publications, private radio and television channels that have opened up since the revolution, but the media today reflects the polarization in our society. We have Islamist channels supporting the president, constantly lashing out at the liberal opposition, and we have the private media vilifying the president and the Muslim Brotherhood. We have an information minister, and that can only mean tight control over state media. State TV anchors complain of interference in their editorial work, but there are a few, you know, bright examples here and there of anchors or journalists standing up against censorship, like the TV presenter who appeared on her show carrying a white shroud to symbolize the demise of free expression. That was a very brave gesture on her part. Many journalists have been investigated by the public prosecutor in recent months, perhaps more in the last year than under Mubarak in 30 years. And although none of them have been put behind bars, this sends a strong message to them and to other journalists. It intimidates them. And It's also meant to silence voices of dissent. But the good news is there is no silencing of those voices. The fear is gone. The revolution in Egypt continues.
Revolucija, pravi Shahira Amin, se nadaljuje. Na medijskem polju so največji izzivi novinarjev cenzura in druge oblike pritiskov. Mona Sebilam iz državne egipčanske televizije Nile TV International, ki oddaja v angleškem, francoskem in hebrejskem jeziku, s primeroma pokaže, s kakšno cenzuro se soočajo. Govori o poročilu, ki ga je pripravil oddelek za cenzuro.
It says that she can't air the episode because she's criticizing the Muslim Brotherhood because, you know, she was talking about the dollar, etc. And the guest said that 85% of the currency exchange companies in Egypt are owned by the Muslim Brotherhood. So they wrote three pages of the things that should be deleted to the extent that you can't really air. So, I mean, she didn't air it. This is another one. And this is brand new thing by the Muslim Brotherhood, the censorship while airing. So the censor told my friend it's okay to air, but then the minister didn't like what was being said because they were criticizing the recent government cabinet reshuffle, so they stopped it on air.
Postavilo se je tudi vprašanje, na kakšen način lahko Evropska unija pomaga pri vzpostavitvi boljšega položaja medijev v Egiptu in regiji nasploh. Sevilamova je precej kritična do Evropske unije, predvsem zaradi dvojnih standardov. S primeri, ki jih je doživela na svoji koži, ko je hotela evropskim političnim veljakom zastaviti kritična vprašanja, pokaže na mnogo cenzure znotraj Evropske unije.
How can Europe help? I mean, I think Europe can help a lot by being vocal. But I think that what's very important for me as a journalist is that they exercise freedom of expression without double standards. Because I'm not just censored by Egyptian officials, I'm also censored when I do my stories with European and US officials. This is Margaret Scobie, and she was the ambassador, US ambassador to Egypt. And before interviewing her, she told me, you're not going to ask me your question about the US anti-ballistic missile system, Egypt versus Israel. So, I mean, yes, this official, she doesn't have the central department for censorship as inside Egyptian television, but she actually deleted my question and I got censored. With Václav Klaus for my program, they asked me not to ask the US anti-ballistic missile system to Czech Republic. With Pascal Couchepin, at that time he was the president of Switzerland. I sent them the questions. They called me up and they said, you have to, the ambassador of Switzerland read your questions. He almost fainted. You have to come because we gave him lemonade. So I went, I met the cultural attaché and he told me, do you mean to embarrass our president? I said, why would I embarrass your president? You already have the questions. I said to myself, what more do you want? You want me to answer the questions? I mean, so he said, no, but I mean, the questions on Israel must be deleted. And these are the questions on Israel. So after a big argument, I told him, it is said that Switzerland is a European country that believes in freedom of expression. He told me, Mona, take your stuff and go home. Come at a certain time to interview the president. And I'm not meddling with your questions. So, I mean, I started knowing, I mean, how to deal with European officials. It was, but I couldn't believe it. I mean, these questions were going to be censored. When I wanted to do a topic for Al Shuruq newspaper, Al Ahram Weekly, and Al Ahram Ibdo, and it was about the Ausschaffung initiative in Switzerland, the deportation of foreigners, criminal foreigners, and about the anti-minaret initiative, I went to Switzerland and then I wanted to interview Micheline Calmy-Reisch. At that time, she was the foreign minister of Switzerland. I got a phone from her office and they said, if you want to appear with Micheline Calmy-Reisch, you should change the topic. I said, which topic do you want me to, you know, to discuss? They said, you talk about the role of Switzerland in Europe. Can you imagine? I mean, I don't know about much role. I mean, Switzerland is not part of the European Union, and they refused entering the European twice. But I said, but my audience are not interested. I mean, who cares about my audience? Are Arabs and Muslims? He said, well, this is we. So I started bargaining, coming from Khan el Khalili market. Can it be 30% questions about, and 70%? He said, no, you have to do this. And so I said, no, I'm not going to change my topic. He sent me to Evelyn Schlumpf, the justice minister. They saw my questions. They said, we're not going to put her name beside these questions. We're not available. We can send you to number two in the Ministry of Justice. I went to Bern and I met him. It took him 1 month to answer the questions. Then, by that time, I had found Andreas Gross. He's from the Council of Europe. And he answered my questions. He was very, very frank with me. And the problem was that I was looking at the Swiss Constitution. And there is an obstacle in the Swiss Constitution. There is a problem with the Swiss Constitution that it does not ban initiatives, popular initiatives, that violate international human rights. So they didn't want to answer the questions. I was looking at the anti-minaret initiative from a legal point of view. I wanted my people to understand that there is a problem, that you can do something, that there can be a solution. But unfortunately, they refused, and Andreas Gross is the one who pointed, who was very vocal with me, and he gave me the interview. So lately, I said to myself, I want to just stay away from the Arab Spring a little bit, do some other problem, and which is not really controversial in Egypt. I decided to do the Cyprus problem. And believe it or not, it's like opening Pandora's box. I went to the Republic of Cyprus, covered the Cyprus problem from the point of view of the Greek Cypriots. Then, 1 week ago, I aired my interview about the Cyprus problem from the point of view of the Turkish Cypriots. I got a phone call from the press officer of the Republic of Cyprus in Egypt, the embassy. I used to be their friend as long as the Cyprus problem was from the point of view of the Greek Cypriots. But now he was wondering about my conscience, telling me, how come? And you couldn't believe it. And he's waiting to analyze my stuff in order to write a complaint. And I wrote a complaint to the Republic of Turkey. And I couldn't believe it. I'm getting here censored again. And it's not the Egyptian officials. I'm not trying to dilute the problem. We have a very big problem at State TV. But it's not just with the Egyptian officials. I tried to, as much as possible, to stay away from Egyptian officials, thinking that it will be rosy with the European and the US officials. But it's not. So my question is, I don't know, I have a question here for the European and US journalists. Do these European officials do this with you too? Or the fact that I'm Egyptian or an Arab, they think that maybe I don't know much about freedom of expression, so they get me from my house to tell me to leave these questions or what? I don't understand. And what do officials think when they don't answer the hard questions? Do they think that they will remain unanswered? And I assure you, Al-Qaeda will answer them. All the radicals will answer them. And I just want to end with sharing something with you. In Egypt today, we have State TV journalists who have a more liberal perception, not mixing religion and politics, and they are being threatened by censorship, investigations, and secret evaluations.
Ena od ključnih poant Mone Sevilam je torej ta, da bi Evropska unija naredila največ za novinarje arabskih držav, če bi sama zvišala svoje novinarske standarde in prenehala s cenzuro na svojem teritoriju. Ko torej Evropa pridiga in uči, pozablja, da gredo znotraj nje same stvari svojo neravno bleščečo pot. Zeitgeist sta pripravila Mare in Gregor. Prav sem Maco tehniciral je Linč. Selam aleikum.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, ne pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam, zagledam Madonna eno žvarno.
Res.
Je bil pa lep, mlad, mlad in tudi siv, siv, ne ta nemški občaj, črn baton, prav tista prava volk. Krasno.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiu Študent.